Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the fifth canto, chapter 14, entitled Material World as the Great Forest of Enjoyment, text number 26. And it's prose, so I'll just read the prose. Kochin mito yavaharanyat kinchid daranam anyebhyo va ka kinika matram apyapaharanyat kinchid va vidvesham eti vita shatyat. Translation. As far as transactions with money are concerned, if one person cheats another by a farthing or less, they become enemies. Purport. This is called samsara davana. Even in the ordinary transactions between two people, there is invariably cheating because the conditioned soul is defective in four ways. He is illusioned, he commits mistakes, his knowledge is imperfect, and he has a propensity to cheat. Unless one is liberated from material conditioning, these four defects must be there. Consequently, every man has a cheating propensity, which is employed in business or money transactions. Although two people may be living peacefully together, due to their propensity to cheat, they become enemies when there is a transaction between them. A philosopher accuses an economist of being a cheater, and an economist may accuse a philosopher of being a cheater when he comes in contact with money. In any case, this is the condition of material life. One may profess a high philosophy, but when one is in need of money, he becomes a cheater. In this material world, so-called scientists, philosophers, economists are nothing but cheaters in one way or another. The scientists are cheating because they present so many bogus things in the name of science. They propose going to the moon, but actually they end up cheating the entire public of large sums of money for their experiments. They cannot do anything useful. Unless one can find a person transcendental to the four basic defects, one should not accept advice and become a victim of the material condition. The best process is to take the advice and instructions of Sri Krishna, or his bona fide representative. In this way, one can be happy in this life and the next. Om Gyane Timurandas Yaganjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurupe Namaha Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasthaya Purtale Srimate Paladananda Swaini Tamane Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasthaya Purtale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaini Tamane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschayate Vacharne. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for allowing me the opportunity to be here, not running away at the croaking of my voice. Every time I read Prabhupada's books, I'm always surprised, even though I shouldn't be, but I'm always surprised at how appropriate, how timely this information is. Prabhupada wrote these purports back in the 70s, but still these purports are just as prescient, they're just as important today as they were back then, as they were 5,000 years ago. These are timeless teachings. So, in so many different ways, we can cheat people. Prabhupada says in the very beginning, we can cheat people because the conditioned soul is defective in four different ways. He's illusioned. He commits mistakes. His knowledge is imperfect. And he has the propensity to cheat. So, if we're here in the material world and people fall into these four different categories, then how do we get knowledge? That's why Prabhupada says that these different classes of men, like the philosopher and the economist, they're both cheaters. They can both accuse each other of cheating. The economist can accuse the philosopher of cheating because the philosopher, he has imperfect senses. He's speculating with his mind. Maybe it's like this. Maybe it's like that. He's illusioned. He doesn't know the real state of existence. But yet he's presenting as if he does know. This is cheating. That's the main problem with so many so-called philosophers. They don't have any access to spiritual understanding, to spiritual teachings. They haven't read the Bhagavad Gita. They don't have bona fide information. So they're speculating, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like that. You know, like the so-called existentialists, existentialist philosophers. They're philosophizing about the extent, nature of the world. That part of reality that's in real existence. So they're thinking that the real existence is here in the material world. They're saying this is the all in all. Therefore God is dead because we have killed him. Famous quote from Nietzsche. You know, so where does that leave people? You know, people go to school thinking that they're learning bona fide information, and yet they're simply being fed a bunch of false information. Thinking this material world is the all in all. This is all there is. We come into existence from nothing. And we go back to nothing when this life is over. So what's the use? What's the whole point? Why bother? What does it really matter? You can do anything you want. There's no consequences, it doesn't really matter. So then people end up debating over the value of life. I remember reading the other day, one devotee was mentioning about this travesty of the earthquake in Haiti, how 170,000 people died from this. 200,000, okay. But he made the point that over 150,000 children are being killed every day in the womb. Yet we're not raising some outcry about this. It's equally as much a travesty. You know, and all this because some people philosophize that, well, it's not really a life. It's just a lump of flesh. It's not alive at that time. So therefore I can do what I want with it because I don't think it's alive. And they're doing this all based upon imperfect senses because they're illusioned. They take one thing for something that it isn't. And because of that illusioned information, they make mistakes. They make wrong choices. Then because of those bad choices, they want to cheat other people to cover up their mistakes. Say, oh, well, you know, really it's like this. And so therefore what I was doing was okay. You know, so one person who was talking with this devotee, they were saying, oh, well, you know, that's a whole different thing, you know. Because abortion's legal. And these other things like killing people, because he was making the case that, well, you know, if where do you draw the line? At some point, there has to be some line. You know, so if you kill people, is that okay? If you, you know, attack people, is that okay? And this, you know, other person was saying, oh, well, you know, those things are illegal. But abortion is legal, so therefore it's okay. But he was just totally missing the whole point. So that's why it's so important, it's imperative that we take knowledge from the proper source. So Prabhupada makes the point in many different occasions about how, yes, we are imperfect beings. And Prabhupada even goes to the point of saying, I may not be perfect, I may be perfect. But that doesn't really matter. Because devotees, they take knowledge from the Supreme Perfect. They take knowledge from Krishna. And they get that knowledge through the chain of disciplic succession. Where Prabhupada says the one qualification is that we don't try to interpret. We don't try to change things. Like a peon. He gives the example of one peon who's given a $1,000 check. So Prabhupada says, say this peon hands me a $1,000 check. And I say, how can you give me this money? You're poor. You have nothing. I don't believe that you can give me this $1,000 check. But yeah, the peon, he doesn't have anything. He's simply delivering what he's been given. Prabhupada makes the same example with a postal peon, a postal delivery person. The delivery person, they don't open the mail and put their own message inside the envelopes. Rather, they just deliver the envelopes as they are. And then the message is transmitted intact in its pure form. So even when we may not be perfect, but still, if we repeat the perfect message from the perfect person, then in that sense, we are perfect. Because we're not changing the perfect message. And so Prabhupada says that everyone must take up this process. Because the world is full of this imperfect knowledge. People, they think that they're getting real knowledge, real information. And so they go to universities, they go to colleges. But as Prabhupada says, what's the use of that? You're simply becoming a skilled craftsman. You know, so you go to university and you learn, you know, engineering, mechanical engineering, structural engineering. Then you can make, you know, a nice motor car. And Prabhupada said, this is simply the work of a blacksmith. So where's the education? You're simply being trained how to be a blacksmith. There's no real information being presented there. All these things, they don't solve the real problems of existence, the real problems of life. One may ask, well, what are the problems of life? It's birth, death, disease, and old age. These are the four problems of material existence. And so all these people, they're making their big, big plans for how to advance human society. But all these big plans, they don't address the central problems of material existence. Like Prabhupada's saying here about the moon. You know, here they are spending billions and billions of dollars to go to the moon. And in one situation, Prabhupada says, even if they did go to the moon, of what use is that? So we have some dust and some rocks. What's dust and rocks going to do for you? Is it going to, you know, cure your disease? Is it going to make you immortal? Is it going to stop birth and stop death? No, it's simply a frivolous waste of money. Like right now there's some outcry over Obama's new budget because he slashed the second mission to the moon. People are saying, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. You know, but is it really? What's going to the moon going to do for us again? Back when the last President Bush was in office, he made this mission for going to the moon for the second time. He called it Apollo on steroids. And everyone is so gung-ho about it. They've already spent something like, you know, $4 or $5 billion on this. And now they're going to scrap it all. billions of dollars wasted. It's all for their personal sense gratification. They're proposing these projects so they can satisfy the corporations that are lining their pockets with money. It's simply cheating. This is cheating. You know, or these scientists, currently they got the Large Hadron Collider up working at the CERN laboratory. CERN stands for a Central European Institute for Nuclear Research. And they have this large atomic accelerator that will smash particles into each other at extraordinary speeds, at speeds near the speed of light. This is like their most advanced front of scientific exploration. And it's called the Hadron Collider because specifically it can produce a particular type of molecule called a hadron. And the particular type of hadron they're looking for is called the Bose hadron. They call this the God particle. You know, in their hubris, they're claiming that God, that matter is God. They're saying that this particle is what imbues mass to other particles. In essence, this particle is what creates matter. That's what they're claiming. And they're saying that by our research and our experiments, we're going to create these hadrons. You know, and so they're currently in the warm-up process for getting this collider up to its operational capacity. And this year they'll be operating it at partial capacity, and then they'll shut down for a year, and then they'll reopen a year later at full capacity. There's a lot of people that are really nervous because this particle collider also has the potential to create miniature black holes. And so there's another group of people that are afraid that, well, you know, this is really going to produce black holes and destroy the whole world. You know, so what's the use? You know, and so even if it does produce this so-called Bose hadron, it won't even exist for less than a couple milliseconds. You know, some nanoseconds at most. And yet they're spending billions and billions of dollars on this project. And even in the same article where they're glorifying this project, they say, even if it doesn't produce this particle, still it doesn't deny the existence of these Bose hadrons. So this is what you call sentiment. This is what you call blind belief. You know, people are just believing in the infallibility of material science, believing that by advancement of material civilization, we can solve all the problems of life. I'll be able to live forever. I won't have disease. I'll be eternally youthful. But this is impossible. It's a pipe dream. It can never happen. But people are so optimistic. Some people are so optimistic in the future of science that even they're freezing their body when they're young in the hope that in the future their body can be de-thawed and then given eternal youth. You know, it brings to mind the idea of Frankenstein. That's the whole idea, you know, that there is no soul, there is no spirit, everything's just material. You can get a bunch of body parts, slap them together, zap them with electricity, and bang, got life. You know, that was the whole thing. For Dr. Frankenstein, actually the monster, it was never called Frankenstein, it was always called the monster. And so Dr. Frankenstein, he had his assistant go out and steal body parts from cemeteries, from graveyards, from morgues. He was supposed to select the finest specimens possible. The strongest arms, most powerful legs, and also the most intelligent brain. But instead he got the brain of a murderer. So they put this brain of the murderer in this body, sewed it all together, zapped it with electricity. And then here comes this monster that they can't kill, they can't even capture. Because this monster is a, you know, in German, Übermensch. He's a Superman. You know, he's immortal. He can't die. That's everyone's dream, to be some immortal Superman with the best of everything. But yet, when this because this monster was intelligent, this monster could think, feel, and so he hated himself. He saw the nature of his brain that he was given, and he saw the nature of human society, and he was disgusted. And so he went and he ran away and hid in the North Pole. So he couldn't stand being around human society. You know, so if you think about it, that's also, if spiritual beings weren't compassionate, spiritual beings would feel the same way. I mean, look at the demigods. They don't want to be around us. They don't come down during Kali Yuga. Because human society is so terrible. People are so embroiled in this bodily concept of life, thinking, I am this body and everyone else is for my enjoyment. You know, or another example of the cheating, since this verse was specifically upon monetary situation, there's this one guy in Houston, and during this whole housing bubble, he was taking advantage of the easily attainable debt, and he was getting subprime mortgages, buying up apartment complexes, and then getting credit cards to pay off those mortgages. So he amassed a debt of about $150,000. And then the whole thing collapsed just when things were starting to turn around for him. And just when he was starting to get the hang of this, everything collapsed. He couldn't, all of a sudden, his tenants couldn't pay him anymore. And so then he couldn't keep funding this machine that he'd created. So he lost everything. He lost all his homes. He lost all his apartments. And he was left with this debt of $150,000 and no way of being able to pay it off. So he started researching because he got sick of being harassed by all the debt collectors. So he researched the different laws in the nation, found out about the fair debt collecting laws that had been passed. And then he would sue the debt collectors. When they would come calling, harassing him, he would ask them certain leading questions, and if they answered the questions wrong, he was recording the whole thing. If they answered the question wrong, then he'd sue them. So every time they would call, he would have his tape recorder handy. Then if they said the wrong thing, he'd take them to court, and he'd win $3,500 for every time. Because they would settle for $3,500 rather than going through the expense of going to trial. Because it wasn't worth it for them. You know, so in this way, he's already made around $30,000 or $40,000 just doing this. And he has his hopes high still because there's this one particular debt collecting agency and they haven't stopped harassing him. And so for a $79 bill, he's suing them for $200,000. It's just insanity. This is all cheating. This is all cheating. So that's why it's so important that we take knowledge from the proper source. Otherwise, what chance do we have? What hope do we have? This material world is so vast. There's so many opportunities for cheating, so many opportunities for being cheated. What chance do we have? You know, it's hopeless. It's like, like even Madhavendra Puri was explaining. Many of you know him, some of you may not. But he's one devotee scientist that's been working on a new paper to disprove the theory of evolution, show how it's practically speaking impossible. So he recently pulled together his latest research and he sent it out to a bunch of devotees, myself included. And he's showing how impossible it is in the stages of prebiotic chemistry for the prebiotic life to turn into self-replicating peptide chains. Yeah, it's this 350-page research paper explaining in detail how this is impossible from many different angles of perspective. First talking about, you know, how it's impossible for these self-replicating chains to have the proper amino acids in the proper order. And then second of all, saying how it's impossible for these amino acids to even come into existence in the proper sufficient quantities from being zapped by lightning in the prebiotic soup. You know, and then even if these do come about, just getting them all together at the right place at the right time, because to have the sufficient volume of water, the whole surface of the globe would have to be covered something like 11 kilometers deep with water. The whole surface. And then to have just a few particles in this whole vast mass of water at the right place and the right time, the probability of that happening is something like 1 times 10 to the negative 100, which is less than 1 in like, you know, a million billion percentage points. It's just so infinitesimally impossible that it's just a belief. These scientists are just having some blind faith that, yes, I'll accept this will happen before I'll accept that God exists and that He created everything. So that's why it's so important that we have to accept knowledge from the proper source. And we have to be very fixed in that knowledge also. Otherwise we'll become deviated so easily. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana Bahu Shaka Hirantascha Budeo Vyavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one, O beloved child of the Kurus. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. Those who are irresolute, their intelligence is many-branched. So if our intelligence is many-branched with all the false hopes, all the false promises of this material world, there is no hope. We'll be endlessly lost trying to chase after, you know, the will of the wisp. And so we have to become resolute in purpose. Have our aim be one. Our aim should be getting out of this material world, getting out of this quagmire of endless speculation, endless cheating. And we do that by grabbing a hold of the teachings of our spiritual master, of our predecessor acharyas, through the chain of disciplic succession, going back all the way to Krishna. Because all the bona fide spiritual masters, they're simply passing down this information of Krishna, these teachings of Krishna, unchanged. So we're getting perfect information from the perfect source through a perfect chain of disciplic succession. And when we accept that information in good faith, without changing it, without mentally speculating, thinking, I know better, I really know how, you know, the appropriate way of implementing this. You know, the Vedas say like this, but I think it should be like that. We can't do that. We have to accept it as it's given to us. As Prabhupada handed it to us, as Prabhupada handed it to his disciples, as his disciples are handing it to my generation, that's how we have to accept it. And then we can actually get out of all this mess. So that's why it's so important. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, on my order, you become guru. Guru means that you repeat this information as it's been presented to you without change. And the key is there, the Prabhupada points out, is when Lord Chaitanya said, on my order. Because on our own order, we can't take up this process. We cannot transmit this information because we'll change it. We'll become cheaters, thinking I'm the proprietor, I'm the dispenser of this valuable information, I'm the benefactor of all humanity. But it's Krishna. So that's why we have to take up this mission and go out and spread this information also. It's one of the seven aims of ISKCON, to systematically propagate through the distribution of literature this Krishna consciousness movement. So every one of us should take up this process. Not only does it please the spiritual master, but it also pleases Krishna. Because really our only hope, our only saving grace is to somehow please the spiritual master. When the spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna becomes pleased. And when Krishna becomes pleased, we become purified of all our imperfections. And we can get out of this material world. So not only does this distribution of transcendental literature benefit humanity at large, it also benefits every one of us. You know, Prabhupada said on one occasion, you know, save yourself first. So there's that old adage, charity begins at home. So yes, it's nice to be compassionate to other people, it's nice to give in charity, but at the same time, you have to give charity where it's needed most. We have to become saved also. We also have to become purified of this material contamination. And all this is possible through this Sankirtan Yajna. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Srigavati Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you. You were making the point in the beginning in the class how one of the very important qualifications of a preacher is that he functions like a postal peon. And you described how the peon, he has no qualification of his own, other than he just delivers it. And you gave the example about he has no money, but if he comes and gives you a check for $1,000 or $1,000,000, it's valid because he doesn't have to have any of his own money, he's delivering you somebody else's money. So that's there. But at the same time, we also hear that we're supposed to develop qualifications. Is that verse, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahetara Pravatana, that only one who's empowered can spread the Sankirtan movement. And there's other statements that same effect, that only purity is the force. So on the one hand, it sounds like, okay, you just have to deliver the message without changing it, that's all you got. You don't have to have any qualification on your own. But on the other hand, we're hearing that you have to become a pure devotee, otherwise you can't be effective to preach Krishna consciousness. You want to have potency. So can you put those two together?
Well, naturally, if you are pure in your devotion, Krishna will use you to a much greater extent. Look at Prabhupada. What he did was unparalleled in the history of the world. He spread this Krishna consciousness movement in less than 12 years, traveled 14 times around the world, was it? Something like that? And opened up 108 temples. Had tens of thousands of followers, spread these teachings all over the world. So, yeah, that's an example of somebody who is pure and how nicely Krishna can use them in his service. But on the other hand, it doesn't require that. Prabhupada said that in so many different situations. I may be perfect, I may not be I may be perfect, I may not be perfect, but I'm delivering the perfect message. Because the message is perfect, the message still has its potency. And you can see this practically. If it required 100% purity, how is it possible that any of us could distribute any books? Even some fresh bhakta off the street, he can go out and distribute just as many books as everyone else. Because he's simply being that conduit. He's being that peon. Parameshwar has been upstaged a couple of times already by some of his bhaktas. They distribute more books than him. You know, are they more advanced than him? Probably not. But still, they have that sincerity, they have that desire. They want to help spread the Sankirtan mission of Lord Chaitanya. And because of that desire, Krishna uses them. You know, we simply have to have the desire. We don't necessarily have to be 100% perfect. That's why Prabhupada said that there's different levels of pure devotees. You know, you were the one who pointed, turned me on to that one tape where Prabhupada was saying, you know, pure devotee, first class, second class, third class, they're still pure devotees. You can be a third class devotee and still be pure. You know, purity in your desire to please Krishna. You may only recognize Krishna on the altar and may not recognize God as being anywhere else. But still, your desire is pure in that you want to please Krishna. You know, to put that in perspective, it's like a mango. A mango is a mango, whether it's ripe or unripe, it's still a mango. You know, naturally, a ripe mango, it's the nicest. It's soft, it tastes good, it's sweet, it's juicy, it's perfectly ripe. It's pleasing to everyone. But an unripe mango, it's still a mango, it still has use. You know, it can be cut up and used in, you know, a pickle or some chutney, something like that, whatever, you can cook with it. It's still a mango though, so it still has utility. So it's that purity that Krishna is using. And he's using it according to our degree of realization and understanding and purity. So when you use Prabhupada, amazing things happened. And when he uses us, things still happen, even though we may not be on that same level of purity. Archita Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you for a nice class. Hey, maybe you can send me that research from Madhavendra Puri. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, on Briga's question, obviously both sides have, you know, because Prabhupada stressed both sides at different times. He said, for instance, in one quote, he said that society will be attracted to our purity. So the more pure you can be, then that more effect the presentation will have. Yes, anybody can go out and distribute books, as you said, even a bucket right off the street. Even somebody who's never joined. Many people do that. They get a book and they don't even like it themselves, but they pass it on to somebody else. That's book distribution. So yeah, in one sense, anybody can do it. Anybody can pass on the message. But for the message to have deep, lasting effect, for the society to be attractive, the members have to be as pure as possible. So purity is still the force.
Yeah.
We have to individually work on our purity, because the more pure each one of us becomes, the more attractive the society looks to the rest of the public.
Yeah.
They see that here are a bunch of people who are really, like Dravid Maharaj said it very nicely once. He said he was going through New York Airport, and this lady who worked in one of the booths there, he had to deal with her on something. She said to him, you know, I really like you people. You really are what you pretend to be. So we really have to become what we pretend to be. We really have to be devotees. Not just pretend to be devotees. We really have to be devotees of Krishna. And people can see that.
Yeah.
If you go out and preach no intoxication, no illicit sex, no meeting, and you go out and do that yourself, then the message is going to be not so effective. People are going to see, what is this? You know, you're giving me a book that says no illicit sex, but I catch you involved in this activity. And, you know, it doesn't have as strong an effect as if you don't do these things. So purity has to be there.
That's definitely true. But at the same time, also, we shouldn't use our lack of purity as an excuse not to follow this process. Oh, I can't do this. I'm so fallen. I can't, you know. So many people, they do like that. Or they use the excuse, oh, well, that was Prabhupada. I'm Mr. Fallen. I can't do like that. You know, so we shouldn't let this be a hindrance, an excuse for our lack of sincerity and lack of endeavor.
Recently, I've been emailing a few people on Facebook, a few devotees, about book distribution. And one of my current emails was with a devotee in the UK. His name is Sri Tulsinath, Tommy Garunga. And the way I got to be friends with him is he bought a carton of Perfection of Yoga. And we were emailing back and forth. He emailed me about Tribhuvanath, and I've been emailing him about the early days of book distribution and Mula Prakriti. And yesterday I told him about some days you will have good days, some days you may have bad days, but keep going on. Even if you give out one book, even if you have one person say Hare Krishna, that is your success. It's the sincerity and the pushing forth on spreading Krishna consciousness and your determination. If you have those bad days and you persist, you get stronger and stronger. So he did have one bad day, and he thanked me. He said, you know, Omkara, I went out. I wasn't that encouraged, but you know what happened? He does door-to-door book distribution. He said, I knocked on doors, some people took, and two people actually closed the door in my face. But later on, those two people called me back, and they took Perfection of Yoga, and they thanked me. And I told them, don't give up. It's that determination. Some people will close the door. Some people will say, no, keep going on. So we have that encouragement to help each other and as God brother and God sister to somehow help each other spread Krishna consciousness by sincerity, by our past experiences, and also by our continued prayer to Srila Prabhupada, to our spiritual master, to the deities, and through our determination and the learning process of sincerity and that determination. Yes, there are good days. Yes, there are bad days. But do not give up, and to always remember it's that sincerity and that desire, because Krishna rewards through determination. He does send people to us. He does send sincere people, because so many people are looking for Krishna. They are waiting out there.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Ki Jai.